Benvenuti ad Alma Lectio, il podcast dell'Università di Bologna dedicato alle Lectio Magistralis tenute da scienziati, intellettuali e personaggi illustri che nel corso degli anni sono stati invitati dall'Università di Bologna a condividere il loro sapere e contribuire alla divulgazione della conoscenza. Nella puntata di oggi ascoltiamo Paul Anastas, chimico statunitense considerato il padre della Green Chemistry, che ha tenuto la sua lezione dottorale il 12 aprile 2024 in occasione della laurea d'onorem in chimica. Buon ascolto!
Magnifico oratore, distinguished guests, members of the faculty and university community, dear friends, I wish to begin with a riddle that I learned as a young child. It asked, "What do you give away but always stays with you?" And the answer is gratitude. I am tremendously grateful to the University of Bologna for this memorable day. And I am profoundly proud to join as a member of the University of Bologna family, as the member of the chemistry family. I particularly want to express my respect and admiration for Professor Emilio Tagliavini, for his career of excellence and humanity. I also want to thank my family, who is not able to be here today, but it is the love that I have for my daughters, Kennedy and Akinna, and for my wife, Julie, is that what energizes me and motivates me every day. Lastly, I want to thank and remember my departed mother and father, who were wise, loving, and without whom I would not be here today. While I am humbled by today's honor, I truly and genuinely believe that individual people do not receive honors, actions do. And if those actions that are being honored today are to advance green chemistry, then indeed, there is a worldwide community of people taking these actions and green chemistry to a more sustainable world every day in their daily lives and in their daily work, with whom I genuinely share this award and recognition. My immense respect for the University of Bologna comes not just for its astounding history as the world's first university. It comes from my experience of today and the present, where I have witnessed the exceptional intellect and thoughtfulness of the university that it brings to bear in all it does and in all things. All of us know that today we hear so much, constantly, about artificial intelligence. But we have to ask, what is intelligence for? What do we use intelligence for? It's to make our decisions, to decide our actions, to determine how we behave as individuals and as a society. But we all know that these things require far more than knowledge and intelligence and knowledge. They require a fundamental understanding of humanity. After all, would we want artificial empathy? Would we want artificial compassion, artificial justice, artificial values, artificial morality, or artificial purpose in life. No. No. Because the very essence and meaning of these things are contained in their genuineness and in their authenticity. That's where their essence and meaning comes from. And so what I believe we all seek is authentic intelligence that will use whatever technological tools that we may create and define, but do it in combination with those irreplaceable attributes that are central to our humanity. I see a global green chemistry community that seeks to use this authentic intelligence in ways that combines scientific insight with broader purpose. And so I would like to tell you a brief story of the periodic table of green and sustainable chemistry. Because we all know, especially as my chemist colleagues know, that chemistry is everything that we see, touch, and feel. It is the material basis of our society and our economy, including all of the materials that we use to generate, store, and transport our energy. And so, as we seek a better world, through, yes, the Sustainable Development Goals, we say, how do we turn these magnificent goals into reality that changes people's lives for the better? Well, we need to start with those humanitarian considerations. And starting from those, yes, we apply the principles of green chemistry and green engineering. And we need to make sure that we have the right system conditions so that these can be put into place so that we can aspire to those most noble goals. Now, each of these building blocks that we strive toward have many aspects to them, tremendously complex. Yes, many elements to each of these goals. And if you will allow me, in tribute to the dear periodic table that all of us know and love, we need to understand what it is that we seek to do to create the world that we all wish for. I must say that when I was a young boy in the 20th century, I loved science fiction. And science fiction then was so hopeful. It was utopia. It was exploring strange new worlds. It was flying cars. It was jetpacks. So optimistic. And yet in the 21st century, we see science fiction. And science fiction is talking about dystopia and post-apocalyptic and very negative. In the 20th century, when I was growing up, one of the most hopeful sentences that anyone could say was, anything is possible. And in the 21st century, the most terrifying sentence that people can utter is, anything is possible. Now why? Do I believe that the 21st century is so much worse than the 20th? Oh no, we had worse pandemics in the 20th century. We lost over 100 million people to war in the 20th century. We saw the emergence of the nuclear threat to destroy all in the 20th century. No, no. It is about our perspectives, the perspectives that we bring. And I bring a perspective, and I hope we all share a perspective, of not something that is unattainable, like utopia, not something that is dreadful, like dystopia, but something that I call newtopia. Newtopia, which is something that is, yes, hopeful, optimistic, but realistic, attainable, and worth striving for. So as we seek Newtopia, we look at this periodic table, and we start with those humanitarian elements. And these humanitarian elements, of course, take care of the basic needs of nutrition, of shelter, of wellness, of water. But it also looks over those things so that we ensure that there are no chemicals of war or oppression, that we are ensuring the access to material resources, not just for ourselves, but for future generations, that we preserve carbon and biogeochemical cycles into the future. These elements, humanitarian elements, are what we have to strive for, is what we have to build upon in all of our actions. Now, when we move to the heart of the table, the middle of the table, these are what our scientists and engineers do every day. This is the heart of green chemistry and green engineering. These are the discoveries, the inventions that embrace this vision of a future that is healthful rather than toxic. It's renewable rather than depleting. It is restorative rather than degrading. Each of these elements, whether it is having the integrated biorefinery and bioeconomy, or developing new catalysts, or new ways of manufacturing, all of these are the manifestation. It's the daily work of a global community of scientists, including the brilliant scientists right here at the University of Bologna. And we do it because of those humanitarian elements. And we have been doing it for decades. We have been doing it for decades, and over those decades, we have seen something grown called the green chemist tree. This tree metaphor shows us that every leaf is not just one invention, but a whole platform, a whole new industry sector that has been brought about by green chemistry. Because so importantly about green chemistry and green engineering is that as we seek sustainability, it is not something where we achieve sustainability by expecting less, doing less, having less. No. This is about what you can create, what you can invent, what you can innovate, what you can discover. So that by aligning our materials and our energy so that they are conducive for life, rather than our past 200 years, which would have often been detrimental to life. By doing this, we can expect more, more function, more value, more performance. And this is the work, the daily work of green chemistry and green engineering with each of these leaves, showing what tomorrow can look like. Now, I must say that whenever I try to say something important, I find that Einstein has said it better before me. And so Einstein once said that the right to search for the truth also implies a duty. That one must not conceal any part of what one has recognized to be true. So what have I recognized to be true? What I have recognized to be true is that with all of the brilliant discoveries, the new inventions, the new technologies, that they, while essential and necessary, are not enough. They are not enough to to have an impact on people's lives, on society, and on the world at the scale and at the urgency that is necessary. It needs to be coupled, and it needs to have partnerships. And so, those partnerships come in these enabling system conditions. All of those things that perhaps aren't chemistry and engineering or science, but are going to be critical in order to realizing a sustainable world. We start with those new conceptual frameworks, different ways of thinking, different ways of viewing what we do and why we do it, the ways that we envision what can be, what should be, what must be. Whether it is embracing biomimicry, which is taking all of the lessons of nature over 3.8 billion years of design and building it into how we do things. Whether it is looking at the circular economy, that rather than taking things from nature and turning them into waste, that we build this so that we follow nature's way and live in cycles. Benign by design, so that we design things with making sure that we get all the performance without all of that hazard and harm. But we move on to economic and market forces. Our economic and market forces will be needed in order to understand true value, true cost, true benefit, making sure that if something is going to cause harm, that it has a cost so high that it will not be incentivized in our markets. So how we think about life cycle, cost-benefit analysis, full cost accounting, harm charge, carbon taxes, so that our economic metrics and models are aligned with a sustainable world. When we look at the way that we measure things, the way that we measure things has often been to make unsustainable products and processes more advantageous in the marketplace. But rethinking how we measure our sustainability is going to be absolutely critical to our success in the future. Policies and regulations. Right now, we often subsidize resource extraction, tax labor, and reward the exact things that are getting us into so many of our problems. The fact that we see subsidies today of $11 million a minute of the fossil industry. I'll say that again, $11 million a minute subsidizing the fossil industry. When we should recognize that a transition, a just transition, is necessary. These are the policies we need to think about. When we think about tools that allow us to design, measure, monitor, whether it's in education, whether it's measuring our carbon footprint, our chemical footprint, these will be critical. And all of these tools combining together to enable the science and the technology that's being invented by green chemistry and green engineering. Perhaps one of the most important lessons, or among the many important lessons that my father taught me when I was a young man, was to speak the language of the tribe that you're talking to. Scientists talking to scientists may be enjoyable, but is not sufficient to bring about change. So as we look at the different partners that are going to be necessary to bring about this change, whether it is scientists, engineers, the public, consumers, lawyers, journalists, policymakers, legislators, leaders, activists, environmentalists, clergy, we need to be able to speak not just to the people that we are most comfortable with, but speak to the people that we need to persuade in order to make change happen. Because without persuasion, things stay as they are. There's the concept in chemistry of valence. You'll see in the first definitions, this is all about how you make change happen. But for today, I am not thinking about the first definition only of valence. Thinking about this third definition, the capacity of one person or thing to react or affect another in some special way, as by attraction or the facilitation of a function or activity. What does that mean? We all have valency. We are all capable of bringing about change. We are all capable of forming groups, and yes, metaphorical molecules, building together collaborations, organizations, institutions, movements, in order to bring about change. Using our individual valency to build these communities of change will be critical to overcoming the status quo. So speaking the language of the tribe we're talking to and understanding what the business community can hear, what the policy community can hear, what the environmental community can hear, and putting it in terms that not only can be understood, but that will be compelling and persuasive to action. Which brings us to our noble goals. These are over the horizon visions that we strive toward. These are our true north, our North Star. We want to make sure that we have a Hippocratic oath for chemistry of first do no harm. We want to make sure that we design for posterity. We don't design for the next quarterly report to increase our stock price. We don't simply try to impress our boss or our mentors or our colleagues. We seek desperately to get the admiration and gratitude of our grandchildren and theirs, because that is who we need to be making our decisions for. That is who we need to be designing for, and that is who we need to be acting for. Now, as I close, it's important to reflect that I've suggested a large number of elements, different aspects of what we need to do. But I ask the question, is that periodic table complete? No, just as Mendeleev proposed a periodic table that had gaps that needed to be filled, and of course were discovered, and new elements added year after year, a periodic table never will be. While we fill out the periodic table year after year, we know that new elements will be discovered. And most importantly, those elements will be different building blocks that can come together in different ways to have new creations and new inventions that we never imagined. I'd like to finish by once again saying how grateful, profoundly grateful, and my gratitude will be lifelong. I want to finish with a quote from somebody who I respected as a young boy and I respect to this day, which is Robert F. Kennedy. He said, "Some see the world as it is and ask why. I dream of a world that never was and ask, why not? Why not?" Thank you.
Avete ascoltato la lezione dottorale di Paul Anastas, chimico statunitense, considerato il padre della Green Chemistry, tenuta il 12 aprile 2024 nell'Aula Psidale di Santa Lucia in occasione del conferimento della laurea d'onore in chimica da parte dell'Alma Mater Studiorum Università di Bologna. Vi aspettiamo alla prossima Alma Lectio!